Welcome to the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series. This is episode 8, where we're heading for the future. We have industry leaders joining us today to discuss the building strategy for a future Ireland. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. Love Irish Food is dedicated to sustainable, local Irish food and drinks brands that supports the many, many, many thousands of local jobs and communities that depend on our Irish food industry. Visit loveirishfood.ie for a full list of your local brands. In this series, we're looking at topics affecting the Irish food industry, ranging from the shop local movement, funding, selling online, digital marketing, and so much more. We have exceptional food and drink talent lined up to give you their tips, insights and knowledge, and all in a 30-minute snack size. Today's guests are James Flahaven, Export Manager at Flahaven's, the 230-year-old family business that has sent generation after generation of children off to school full of porridgey goodness. James previously worked in investment banking in London, but wisely found his way back to the family firm based in beautiful Kingle MacThomas in County Waterford. And also in studio is Brian O'Sullivan, MD Retail at Keelings. Brian previously worked as MD at Cadbury Ireland before moving to Switzerland to take up a senior international director role at Cadbury's parent company, that is Mondelez. On his return to Ireland, he became CEO of Fulfill Nutrition, leading the scaling of this Irish startup company to treble its consumer sales. But now, as I say, he's MD Retail at Keelings. You are both most welcome. I'm going to ask you to do the impossible. Either of you, both of you, tell me about the future. We'll start with the lotto numbers. You know, let me go back, actually. Brian, I'll ask you first of all, like, trying to forecast the future in the food industry, it is, maybe you won't agree with me, a fashion industry. Were you ever able to predict the fashion, or were you a follower of fashion?
Yeah. I think whatever hope you'd have had of forecasting the future pre-COVID, I think coming out of COVID is a lot more difficult. And I think, you know, what's facing us and our industry and every industry is quite a turbulent exit of COVID, rather than, you know, people mentioned the COVID recovery, which sounds lovely and smooth. I think it will be a lot more turbulent than that. So for me, the key is to be agile on the way out and, you know, have your plans by all means, but be quick to change them as things change and the landscape changes.
When you say have your plans, which is all and well, that reminds me of business plans. They don't really mean an awful lot when the fan starts being hit. So you say agile. Mm-hmm. Now, we're trying to learn from this podcast series. What in your head does agility mean to an early to middle stage food company?
I think it's a blend of this thing of having a plan and then being able to adjust it, I think. So
have plan B.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be, you know, an excuse not to plan, and it shouldn't be, you know, stick to the plan regardless at all costs. I think the key thing is to have your plan, know where you're going, you know, be able to explain that to employees, to everybody in the company and customers and so on. And then as the landscape changes, to be able to adapt really quickly to what new things come at you. And I think especially in COVID, you know, we're still learning. I think every day is a school day post coming out of COVID, and nobody's really quite sure where the consumer is going to finish up and how their lifestyle will change as a result of it.
But if you tell me that you're not sure, that means that we have to make it up, because people want to know, people need to know. And you have such a long history in the business, across many, many businesses in the food industry. You must have some feeling for it.
Well, I think the key trends don't really change. You know, the trends that were there pre-COVID, they've just been accelerated during COVID. So you have the healthy food trend, you have sustainability, which is, you know, a key thing. You've online retailing, which has taken off and accelerated during COVID. And all of those trends will stay in place. So, you know, to plan for those is the right thing to do. I think how people's lifestyles will come out of COVID is still uncertain. And I think, you know, even people who are in the food service industry are finding it difficult to, first of all, to guess where will consumers go? Will they all be happy to come back and eat in restaurants as they were before? Or will there be a blend now of, actually, I saved a load of money during COVID and we cooked at home, and that became an event in itself. So, you know, how will that blend work coming out of COVID will have a big impact. And you've also the working from home element. So that has changed eating habits, people buying more in the supermarket, bringing it home and eating at home. Now, as people go back into the office, how often they go back to the office? Will they buy food now on the go again? Or will it be a blend of the two?
It is complicated, isn't it? James, you, one of your hats is that you are the export manager for Flahavens. And I do know about Flahavens that there is an online element to it. Do you see that's going to grow big in the coming years, or what's your thinking on the future in the broader sense?
Yeah, I suppose if you look at online as a whole, you know, I think, you know, everyone is as Brian has said, is kind of moving in that direction. You know, it's a trend that's there. And, you know, I suppose various different markets are at different stages in that journey. So if we look at some of our, you know, one of our better markets is say in South Korea, you know, the majority of our sales there are via online retail. And I think...
Got to stop you there, because everybody's saying, did he just say South Korea? How is Flahavens getting known in South Korea?
I suppose it goes back a good number of years now. So back to, I think about 2012, 2013, we started working with our distributor over there. The market, it just, you know, was a case of kind of right place, right time. And we seem to have capitalized on that. A number of kind of trends moving, you know, in the right direction for us.
Let me ask you again, though. South Korea, like you say, the right place, right time, sounds fantastically opportunistic. But why did you choose South Korea?
Well, like I said, it was we were introduced to a distributor who had just she had just finished an MBA in Trinity, and you know was she's Korean herself, and she was looking to establish a business in Korea to bring, you know, she'd lived here and she knew how good quality of food produced in Ireland was, and she, you know,
go and get the ad out and Flahavens
and well obviously and ourselves, so she wanted to bring the quality of Ireland, especially from a food and drink perspective, back to her native Korea, and then we were one of the kind of products that worked. Like I suppose there was quite a niche of products that would work from a distance and time point of view. So for us, we have, our products are all ambient, you know, at least 12 month shelf life on it, so they can sustain a sea voyage of, you know, somewhere between 60 to 80 days roughly. At the moment would be the kind of variation in the sea freight to get it across. So yeah, it just started off small. We were working with some online retailers at the start, and it just grew and grew. And she told me a statistic there recently that it's something like 60% of all grocery shopping is done via online now in Korea. So I suppose I look at that as a much more advanced market into online, compared to where we are at the moment. And then if we look at our neighbours in the UK, you know, there's a good number of the retailers that have, you know, very good online platforms, and there'd be, you know, a couple of dedicated online retailers as well. So I think the penetration of online shopping is a bit higher in the UK, and I think, you know, it's only moving in that direction. So it's really us, you know, when we set up our, you know, you refer to the online shop, it's very much in its infancy. I suppose we just felt that, as Brian said, it's just the right thing to do, that we have some kind of platform that we can go direct to consumer with, you know, because, you know, we do get consumer queries a lot of the time saying, you know, I can't find this product or that product, can you tell me where to get it? And we could never supply them directly. So this is now an outlet to try and address that need.
We have skipped over kind of the COVID, the C for COVID word, but B for Brexit. We have to face up to it. And it just never, it's the gift that doesn't stop giving in the wrong way. I presume Brexit is not going to get any easier for Flahavens.
It's, I don't think it's going to get it easier. No, I suppose, yeah, as Brian was mentioning earlier as well about kind of scenario planning, you do have to plan for all of these things. I suppose Brexit was a really challenging one because a lot of the time the rules were changing, you know, week to week.
Still
so
are.
You make Still one plan. Are. And then they change, and then you make another plan and it changes again. So yeah, you're constantly having to be agile to that and adapting to the news as and when it happens. I suppose the big thing we were watching out for was tariffs and duties. And you know, thankfully they didn't come in, or well, haven't to date anyway. So that was a big concern for us to maintain our business there. So it accounts for about 20% of our overall sales is to the UK. So
that's
it is
chunky.
Very significant.
That's chunky, yeah.
Yeah. So we weren't going to, you know, we weren't willing to kind of let it go without, you know, some element of minding to it.
But can you then, because other people are trying it as well, can you divert out of the UK if needs be? Because as we record, the whole Brexit thing has become so uncertain again, and we may be heading into some form of a trade war.
Yeah, like I think it's one of those things. It's quite easy to try and diversify away from the market. But I suppose when you take into account, you know, the other neighbouring countries, it's Central Europe, and you look at kind of in our specific case around breakfast habits and breakfast patterns, porridge oats aren't, you know, a highly consumed item at breakfast time. So the equivalent market per population isn't there in Europe compared to what it is in the UK market. So I suppose we're you know, we'll persevere with the UK market, whatever comes out of the current kind of exchanges. And I suppose we will continue to go after some of the European markets, but they will take time to develop and to try and bring online.
I, wearing another hat, am always in contact with business leaders across the island, and I do know one of the other big issues is employment or lack of employees. Are either or both of you facing that? And if so, what do you think you can do about it in the midterm? Brian?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge issue. It's probably the biggest issue, I think, of the day today. And the issue isn't just with us, you know, as a supplier and a producer. It's actually right through the chain. And I think it's getting worse as we currently sit here. It's very hard to understand how the PUP is still being paid when there's such a shortage of labour. But I'm not even sure that the PUP will, you know, coming off, will fix the scale of the labour issue. I think, you know, when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, there are restaurants that are not open on Mondays and Tuesdays because they've no staff, they've no chefs. There are restaurants closed on weekends because they don't have staff. There are deliveries not being made because there aren't enough drivers. And, you know, you go on all the way through the chain. And it's not just an Irish problem. It's a European-wide problem. I mean, we've seen a lot of the coverage of the UK and drivers and the issue with drivers there. And, you know, they're short 76,000 drivers in the UK, but they're short 120,000 in Poland. So, you know, where we used to get migrant labour coming from Eastern Europe, that's no longer available because there's plenty of work there. So it's a much bigger problem, I think, than and we'll see it unfold, I think, over the coming months.
And that's the problem. So what's the solution?
I think the solution is innovation, really. And it's up to everybody, I think, to innovate in terms of, you know, can you automate more of the processes? Can you streamline processes more?
How would you say now in Keelings, how could you automate it more?
I mean, it's very difficult with fruit because fruit is a very delicate, delicate product. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, what are our processes for from the fruit, you know, coming off the plant all the way through the system and out the front end to see how can we make that even slicker and therefore reduce the requirement for labour. But we'll always need plenty of labour. That's, you know, the very nature of it. And on the farm, it's much more difficult because it's even more manual on the farm. But we're always looking at how can we make it better? How can we automate it? Ultimately, you know, getting the right quality out the other side. And then what innovative ways can we attract labour? So, you know, we're competing against other industries, other sectors, and we need to be top of our game in terms of recruiting. So we need to provide a good atmosphere, a good environment for people to work at their best for a fair wage. And I think, you know, that's going to be a challenge as wages go up and demands go up around the industry. I think that'll be a major challenge.
And James, I'm presuming from a level of ignorance that you're reasonably well automated. in Kilmacthomas?
We have some level of automation, yeah. So packing lines, things like that would be quite automated. I suppose we are probably a little bit insulated from the current kind of labor shortage. You know, we have our kind of workforce that's been with us, you know, quite a long time, and a lot of them kind of, you know, it might have been their parents would have worked or fathers would have worked with us, and now you know their children are working in the business as well. So you know, we have, you know, quite a good connection, I think, into the local environment in rural Waterford. We still probably want to have a good working environment, and you know, have good facilities for staff and treat people the right way.
You are listening to the Love Irish Food podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.
I'm going off on a little limb here, and I wonder whether you know the answer. The company, Fahavens, has a magnificent heritage, 230 years. Is there by any chance a family or families that have worked since the very beginning, generation after generation? Now, I know it's a big ask.
Well, other
you can
than ourselves,
the fifth if you want.
I don't think we have records going back that far. I know my dad is really into archiving, and he's, you know,
but it's a tremendous tribute to you that you keep families. Like, that is what any business should really aspire to, that it's, you know, you're good enough for my mom and dad, I think I'll go there as well.
Yeah. No, it's something that we're kind of really, really proud of. And recently we've actually done some photography in the business around, you know, some of the families that have been working with us over the years. So, you know, whether it's gotten back in, you know, a grandparent, a father and a son, and, you know, have kind of the three generations maybe that might have worked there. You know, some of them still with us, obviously. So we've tried to do things like that. To kind of maybe highlight some of that kind of the family nature of the business. It's outside of the Flahavens family as well. It's all the families that we're connected to, you know, our suppliers, our oats growers, and staff as well. So, yeah.
It is a properly sustainable type business, isn't it?
It's very important to us. Yeah. Sustainability is kind of, you know, I feel kind of crucial for us. Yeah. If you want to have that kind of longevity, you know, you need to be looking at what's, you know, what business components are going to be sustainable.
I haven't spoken about the population issue for a long time, so and no better time than now to bring it up, because one of the good news is for both of you is that our population, if the future it does turn out like it should, particularly by population, we should see a big increase in our local population. I was going to say indigenous, it'll be a mix. And that must be good for both businesses. Brian?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good for all business for population growth, because that creates the demand. And I think, you know, while in there might be some changing tastes and profiles of what people consume, I think it's just good news that the population grows, and once we can keep it in sustainable employment, I think that's the key to keep the money flowing through the economy, and then it's good for everybody.
I see on my notes here that the events are hugely important, like Bloom and things like that. Hopefully we're going to get back to there. I'm now looking for further insights or tips to those smaller, medium-sized, probably those who will eat your lunch eventually, James, but companies that are starting out or early stage, hints that where should they be? What could they be doing? What should they look at? Any ideas like that? And again, you're wearing an export hat as well. So tell them about where they, maybe how to get into South Korea, for example.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the like mentioning there about events, I think, yeah, we've all been kind of in hibernation, I think, when it comes to events for the last, you know, 20 months, and we're kind of looking forward to getting back to some of those, like the Blooms of this world, you know, which are, you know, really good consumer events, because I suppose you, from our point of view, we would have felt that they're a kind of a consumer facing event where you get to, you know, spend time with the consumer, and they can talk to you and, you know, tell you, you know, whether, you know, how you know, stories about your product or how they interact with the brand. And, you know, they don't know who you are, you know, and it's a good reason for us to, for all of our staff who wouldn't necessarily be consumer facing to go up and spend a day or two on the stand and to, you know, be on the front line and talk to people and, you know, be advocates for the brand as well. I suppose if I was to say, you know, to some kind of, you know, more startup type companies, there, you know, in terms of exports, there definitely are opportunities out there. I suppose Boardbia would be one of the resources that you would avail of. You know, they often have different events for companies of different sizes, you know, tailored to, you know, whether you're small, medium, large, whatever the case might be. And they would give a lot of advice around pursuing different markets. For example, like the US market is probably one of the largest consumer markets out there, but it's, you know, actually one of the most challenging to break into because it's so competitive, because there's so many rungs in the value chain over there. There's so many people that need, you know, that look to extract margin before you get to the end consumer. So it's actually probably one of the last markets you would go for when you know the full background around, you know, what it would take to have any kind of meaningful distribution there.
Sounds to me like you've done a bit of homework there. Would I be right?
Well, we are in the US market, and you know we probably went in there back in 2010 with a plan to, you know, to grow to a certain level and a certain level of profitability within kind of maybe 3 to 4 years, something like that. But you know, it's taken a lot longer to get to that stage than what we would have envisioned. So yeah, it like there's a lot more low hanging fruit around than maybe some of the bigger markets that have, you know, that look good on paper when you see the absolute size of them. But when you understand the challenges and the route to market, then they become kind of less appealing.
So instead of heading west to the States, would you head east into Europe or south towards Africa, or where would you go?
I suppose I would feel kind of, yeah, Europe is probably a good starting point. You know, I suppose there are markets there that are, you know, all markets are competitive. There might be some that would be a little bit easier to get into. Like, say, for example, the Middle East now would be a market that we sell to. And I suppose from our point of view, there probably wouldn't be that many indigenous manufacturers there. So you're not competing with a local manufacturer. So pretty much all of the similar products to ourselves would all be imported. So you're at a certain base then in terms of comparison. You know, you're kind of starting at a similar level.
When you go, because I'm thinking about this now, about Middle East, are they buying Flavins the brand or Flavins the Irish brand?
I'd say it's probably a bit of both. You know, so you know, we make no apology about the fact that we're Irish, you know, and we say it very proudly on our packs.
But does that help, say, in the Middle East, just for an example?
I think it does, yeah. I suppose Ireland has a very good reputation for quality, food quality, abroad. And maybe we don't give ourselves enough credit for it here, but our international reputation would be, you know, second to none. You know, we have a really good food quality reputation. So it does carry a lot of weight, the fact that it originates in Ireland.
Brian, I think that you and I might be a little bit older than James. So what I'm hearing there is, well, if you go back decades now, mm-hmm. Irish food did not have the cachet that it has now. There's no doubt that the world has changed so fundamentally in this country vis-a-vis our food and our food brands. When you are selling your fruit with Keeling, are you promoting an Irishness, and how can you promote that with, I mean, frequently it's going to be imported fruit.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, we have, you know, 450 acres of farms here in Ireland. So that is our core of our business, is producing Irish fruit. And that means an awful lot to consumers, particularly in strawberries. I think Irish strawberries has a cachet.
In the world, full stop.
Exactly. And Keelings are the best of the Irish strawberries. And I'm sure you'll agree. But I think that's something that can be built on, really, because if you think of the sustainability agenda, which is about, you know, reducing travel, reducing energy and so on, the more locally produced product that's available for consumers will only help in that regard. So it's about the quality, number one, and then getting closer to the market being secondary. But quality is something that, you know, you have today, but you have to work really hard to maintain that quality and improve that quality over time. And I think the challenge for Irish producers is not to just sit back and say we have that today, but actually how do we take that forward and continue it into the future?
Well, here's now a $64 million question for you. How can you improve on a Keeling strawberry?
Well, there's numerous ways. So the growing system is number one. So how do you actually... the whole process of growing. There are varieties, different varieties of strawberries, which keep improving all the time. So you're always looking for the best varieties. What's coming next, and where can you take that? A slight delay because, you know, what you plant or what you buy today in terms of plants won't deliver fruit for 2 years. So you have to be thinking ahead, but that's continually evolving. I mean, to give you an example, Gunal, the berry category has doubled now in 10 years in size.
And is that the health kick thing?
It's the health kick thing, but quality. Quality is key. If you think of it, you mentioned having your flavins in the morning. If you have nice blueberries, you'll put in more blueberries.
I see blueberries going onto the flavins porridge at home. Indeed, I do.
Exactly. And if they're particularly nice, there'll be an extra few go in. So it's an expandable category from that perspective. But it's all off the quality platform, really.
How do you fight, and I do mean fight, with the imports? Because I see, you know, the big chains bringing in tons and tons and tons of, if not thousands of tons, of fruit from abroad.
Yeah, I mean, there's a natural piece, which is, you know, you're in season and you're out of season, so that causes an issue. But you can extend the season through, you know, we have heated glass, which gets us product as early as March and continues into as late as October. So we're stretching the season in, or the Irish season. So that's one way of doing it. The second way is you have to remain competitive. So, you know, you have to continually invest in new methods of growing, into automation where possible and so on. So it's a mixture really of investment and then extending that season so that you can compete with imports.
And innovation, I'm going to ask both of you this, innovation on the product range. Obviously, you should always be looking to expand the product range. Can you, what are you doing, particularly on fresh fruit, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, the key thing, if you think of quality being the key, so how do you improve quality? So you have your varieties and you choose what varieties. You continually invest in R&D so that you're producing new plants for seasons to come yet. And then within... the growing system, how you can improve your yield, therefore you're getting, you know, better cost, and therefore you're more competitive in the market. So you get all that lined up, and then there's also innovation in how you work as an organization, not just in regard to the product itself, but how you satisfy customers' needs, how you maintain that level of service to customers, how you help the consumer realize how they can use fruit in different ways, different meals and so on. And then you're expanding the category all the time. And I think those two areas are areas where we can invest a lot now. So actually, if we can get people to use fruit more, you're going against the health trend, which is there. You're getting your five a day and then you're growing the categories and then everybody gets excited.
You know what that five a day was made up? We should be having
No,
I think that was actually a marketing campaign, which is fantastic, but we should be eating 10 a day or 15 a day. It's actually, one of the challenges at the moment is that, of course, there are people who don't have their five, but that to move them beyond the five. James, back to innovation on your side, like rolled oats, and there are many ways of consuming them, but can you go even broader?
Well, yeah, I think you can. So we launched a product there last year, which was an oat drink. So we, you know, it was new for us. You know, because we're very rooted in kind of the food food side. So we brought out a range of three different oat drinks. We have a barista one, an organic, and a vitamin rich.
You better give the brand name.
Well, a Flavin's oat drink, obviously. And I suppose, yeah, the barista one has really kind of coincided with the kind of movement towards, you know, all the outdoor cafes last year, coffee shops, and you know, horse boxes that popped up around the country, and more people are looking for a you know, for whatever reasons, whether it be environmental, looking for something that's kind of, you know, either vegan or vegetarian option.
This is going to upset your neighbours in Waterford, who is a big dairy county, and you are replacing their lovely milk with lovely oat milk.
Well, I suppose, yeah, that's one way of looking at it. But I suppose the other lens would be, you know, we're using Irish oats, and you know, we're working with Irish tillage growers for years and years, and it was actually highlighted in a Chagas report last year around, you know, there's big opportunities for Irish oats and Irish tillage farmers in alternative milks, grain alternatives. So oat milks is the leading plant variety within that segment. And I suppose what was missing in Ireland is, while the category was growing, there was no oat milk that was made using Irish oats. And you know, that's something that we wanted to, you know, to address and fill
that. That is a perfect segue into, if there are people listening and you're suggesting to them areas in which they should go into, you've got a little boy called Harry. When Harry grows up, where should Harry go working? Of course, he's going to go working with Flavins, but while he's literally cutting his teeth, he's only a little boy. What areas would you suggest people go into in the food sector?
Well, yeah, I suppose he's only 9 months now, so
it's a little bit
far off, I think. But I suppose, yeah, like what I'd be very hopeful for him to just keep an open mindset and just be willing to kind of, you know, learn as much as he can as young as he can, and you know hopefully be passionate about something and kind of follow through on that.
Okay, let's move on. Let's assume that we'll call him Jack at this stage. Is what areas do you think that people should be looking at? Like that oat milk thing to me came out of the blue, but you too are watching trends all of the time, I assume. What do you see next as a trend?
Well, I think, you know, we kind of spoke about it earlier in the podcast. You know, it's kind of connected to the, you know, sustainability trend and environmentalism. So, you know, a kind of a natural progression of that is kind of the plant-based foods. And we're seeing so much innovation in that space. I think that's an area that there's a huge amount of opportunity for kind of investment from you know, a capital and personal point of view. You know, you're seeing some of the valuations that are being put on some of the early the companies that started into that space, the likes of the, you know, the Oatleys and, you know, the Beyond and all of those. And you know, they're built off of expectations, so there's huge expectations for companies like that.
And Brian O'Sullivan, you're on a personal journey because you started off in chocolate, then you went into fulfilled nutrition, which was healthy, and you can't get any more healthy than fresh fruit. What's the future that you would say to anybody that's listening? Go into that area there, or check out that area there, that sector?
I mean, I think the big trend is healthy eating, and that will continue for lots of reasons. I think, you know, there's a... the health of the population, obviously, there's the cost of the healthcare system. You know, there are so many reasons why healthy eating will be promoted by government and by individuals. So I would encourage anybody to, you know, who is a leaning towards that, to get into the technology side of food, and where that can take us and how it can create more healthy food and continue that journey in that way. Because I think that is the future of food.
And brilliant, brilliant third level courses in food technology that people should check out. Forget about being a solicitor or a barrister or a doctor. food technology, it'd like be doing something useful.
And I think there's a huge history in Ireland of food. So, you know, it's, while London might be, you know, banking is their thing, I think Ireland is a food country. And I think that's something that we should continue to encourage people to become involved in and take us to the next level of what does food mean in the world, not just for Irish or for the Irish market.
Now, I did ask you off air, both of you, for the lotto numbers, and you're no good at that. So if I were to ask you, James, in 5 years' time, where will Flavins be in terms of growth or what you're doing from now?
I suppose from my own point of view, I've always looked at more the export side of the business than the domestic Irish market side of the business. So I'd be personally hopeful that the exports would be, you know, getting up to about 50% of our company turnover from where they are at the moment, closer to about 30%. That's something that we're kind of looking towards and putting kind of resources maybe behind. I think you know, we'd hope to be doing a bit more innovation into areas outside of our, you know, comfort zone around, you know, just the traditional porridge oats category. So, that's something that we're trying to put a bit more focus on.
That's really interesting. 50%, that's good. Brian, five years' time, Keelings, where will it be?
I mean, Keelings is, there's two fronts, really. One is an international front. So half of our business roughly is outside of Ireland now. So we're bringing our expertise in fruit to other countries. And I think that we're only at the beginning of that. So that can grow exponentially over the next 5 years. I think within Ireland, while we're a big player in the fruit category, there's still loads of room for growth. And I think we can continue to deliver for our customers, deliver for consumers, and continue to grow the business in Ireland through great quality product and ultimately a good value.
And that's despite COVID and Brexit everything else. That is a really positive note on which to end. You have just been listening to James Flavin, Export Manager at Flavins, and Brian O'Sullivan, MD Retail at Keelings. Thank you both for joining us on this, the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series, episode 8. Do listen back to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They're well worth listening to, and I hope you enjoyed this episode.
The Love Irish Food Podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.